serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation today with 93-year-old Joe Haritani of Sonora, California, a veteran of the 442nd Regimental Combat Team during World War II, a veteran of the 442nd Regimental Combat Team during World War II. And you know, I want to thank Chase Anderson for introducing me to Joe. Chase wrote an outstanding piece about Joe for Friends and Neighbors magazine in California's Gold Country. I have it linked for you on our website, hometownheroesradio.com. And that article is why I know there's another wrinkle to this story of Joe's post-war return to Livingston, California, where his parents had just returned after finally being set free from the Amache internment camp in Colorado. I read that they weren't even sure you were still alive. There was a report earlier that you had been killed when Johnny was killed. Is that right?
Yeah, they thought it was me who was killed. And whoever reported it reported that it was me that was killed.
So the report went back to your parents. And you said you never wrote your parents during the whole war. So your mother and father didn't know if you were alive or dead.
Oh, they thought I was dead. Yeah. But, you know, we were in a big family with seven kids, so it's not as bad as a family with just one or two. Anyway.
I think it's still a pretty big deal if you think you lost your son, especially while you're locked up behind barbed wire. So your mother thinks you're a robber, then your dad says it's Joe. She must have had quite a reaction to that if she's thinking you're dead.
Well, yeah, they went to the front window and peeked down and saw me, and I was in uniform. So they knew right there it was not a robber.
But as you said earlier, all those things, those keepsakes, those heirlooms, those valuables that you had stowed away in the basement of that social hall, they're all gone.
There was nothing left. I think they even left the door open. It didn't matter because everything was taken out. So, you know, we're sad about that. What are nice things that we had saved is all gone. And I think people from the town or farmers living near us took those things, and we never saw them again.
Was it hard to jump back into life again, or was that a relief that your time in the military is over and you can think about having a life again?
Well, when I got back, I really didn't know what to do. I had nothing to do because we weren't farmers. We didn't have a farm. And my father had his church, and my mother also helped him with the church. But what happened was I was there for, I guess, a couple of weeks, and an old friend from high school who was working as a gardener in Los Angeles area. I guess he heard I was back in Livingston, so he drove up. We got together and talked about it, and I think he stayed overnight or something. And he said, why don't you come back with me down to Los Angeles area and gardening and do gardening with me? I said, well, oh, why not? I don't have anything else to do. So I went back with him and started working with him in people's garden, cutting the lawn, taking care of shrubs, watering, that sort of thing. And I did that for maybe a year or two, and I got tired of that. So I went back home. I guess that's when I went back to Modesto Junior College.
Well, I guess it's a good thing you went back to Modesto Junior College, because isn't that where you met your wife?
Yes. She was a student there, and a lot of the Nisei, we call them, they're second generation Japanese who were born in the States. Most of them, you know, off of farms, and my wife was also, as they would get jobs in the wealthier families in the Modesto, what they call them, school girls, and they would help cook, wash, laundry if they had a little kid, take care of babysitting. And I did the same thing, except I didn't do any cooking. And I remember the family had this furniture store. They had a large closet, and they put a bed in there for me to sleep. Yeah, that was my home.
So what was it about Amy that caught your eye, and when did you realize that she had been at the Merced Assembly Center at the same time as you and at the concentration camp in Amachi at the same time?
I didn't know her there. They were in a different part, one far end of the camp. But at the Modesto Junior College, there were just a few Japanese Americans. So we would get together, you know, in the library or wherever, because they worked in homes, so we couldn't, you know, get together in their home. But I guess I finally fell in love with her. And recruiters from Stanford University, I don't know why, but I was interviewed by them. I guess because I was a veteran, and maybe they wanted some veterans in their student body. They offered to have me attend Stanford at their cost. So I moved from Modesto to Stanford. And at about the same time, my future wife moved down to San Jose State University, went to school there. I graduated from Stanford. And then a couple of other classmates decided to go to UC Berkeley. And I thought, well, I'll go there and also get a master's degree, which I did.
Well, and how long have you two been married now?
We got married in 1948.
And you had some fascinating work after that. You worked for USAID. Tell people what that is and what you did.
Well, I was a sanitary engineer, worked in public health, and mostly in water supply. The first country that we were stationed in was in Bolivia in South America, and I would go around to the small towns. We had a well drilling team, and we would drill deep wells and put either a windmill or a hand pump onto the well so that people could get water, because they were most... A lot of the small towns, they didn't have any water supply at all. They had a stream or something where the wife would go out in the bucket and get water and bring it back home, cook with it. So that this is a big improvement. They got good fresh water out of the well.
And you did the same thing in Nicaragua and Vietnam. That must have been satisfying to have such an impact on so many people's lives.
Oh, yes, but in Vietnam, I started setting up health centers. We'd have nurses and sanitary engineers providing basic health care to the townspeople. And I remember covering South Vietnam, quite a few. I forget how many provinces, but we covered them all.
And then you worked for the Peace Corps, too?
Yes, I worked first in Ecuador. You know, my background as a sanitary engineer, I was always in water supply. We would sometimes tap a spring and build like a dam to a pipeline and bring the pipeline down to the village and collect water in a pool so the women can come with their buckets and supply water for the family. During one of our home leaves from South America, my wife and I realized that when we finally left the Foreign Service, we didn't have to find a place to live here. But we didn't move there right away till after we finished our Peace Corps service.
Well, and I'm curious too, all that work you did around the world, and it wasn't just traveling the world, it was helping people who were in a real difficult situation who didn't have clean water to drink, and you're helping supply clean water for them in places like South America and Southeast Asia. Did those experiences give you a different perspective or appreciation about America and about being an American?
Oh, yeah. I thought that we're really lucky. I mean, you know, especially being a Japanese American, if our parents didn't come here, we would be in Japan under occupation.
Yeah.
So it was, I mean, we never thought about it that way, but that's how it would have been.
Well, and speaking of, you mentioned something earlier, and it made me wonder. You were talking about your mother and that her father had been a very rich man on Hokkaido and even owned his own small town. What happened to them in the war, your mother's family?
I have no idea. She never talked about it. I think she went to college, or like a junior college in Tokyo. So, you know, left the family behind. That's where she met my father and got married. So I think the previous life was just history, and they were really involved in their present and future life as a Methodist minister and wife.
Have you ever wondered about that, though? I mean, that's your grandfather who's up there in Hokkaido. Have you ever wondered, were those relatives of mine bombed by B-29s? Are they, you know, did they survive the war? Never wondered about that?
Never thought about that. Never entered my mind. I never thought about anything beyond my mother. That was all. The verse never existed, you might say, in my mind.
And what about your service in the 442? And before I forget, I want to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country, and thank you for telling us about it. When all these years after the war, 2011, they say, hey, the Congressional Gold Medal is going to every Nisei veteran, whether he's in the 442nd or the MIS or whatever, we want these men to know that we appreciate what they did. What did that mean to you to receive the Congressional Gold Medal?
Well, that's a lot, because that's a very unusual decoration to receive. It made you feel very special. Not too many people have the gold medal, so I was very pleased to be able to get one.
And you know, right now, the Go for Broke National Education Center out of Los Angeles has a traveling exhibit. It's been in Kingsburg, California. It's going to be in Monterey soon. It's in the Midwest right now, in Minnesota. It's been in Ohio. But basically, it's the whole point of it is to educate people about what happened during World War II, about Executive Order 9066, about the loyalty test that you guys had to answer to, and about men like you who went over and served even while their families were being held prisoner. What do you think is the most important thing that we can learn from that time in our history? The people today who are alive today who didn't live through that, what should we know about it, and what should we learn so it doesn't happen again?
Well, I think that instead of looking at people's race or religion, I think we have to look at people as honest to goodness individual citizens of the United States, and that because of our citizenship, we are actually very special in this world. We're not also very lucky to be living here, and that's why people are always trying to immigrate to the United States, because I think the whole world knows that this is probably the highest level of citizenship and life on this earth.
You're 93 years old. You've done a lot of things in your life. You've experienced things most of us haven't. Is there something that you would say that you're most proud of or most thankful for?
I guess the thing I'm most proud of was serving in the 442nd as a U.S. Army soldier. I think that was a high point in my life. The other, of course, is my married life and the wonderful wife and kids I had.
I'm not trying to be dramatic or anything, but have you ever stopped and thought, hey, if I was still in that slit trench next to Johnny, I never would have met my wife. My three sons and my two grandkids would have never been born.
No, I never thought about it in that way. I just accepted things as they happen, as how life goes on, and you make the best of things as they come along. I think the life that I have with my wife here in Sonora, it's really quite unusual and wonderful to be living in a small country town, enjoying our neighbors and friends. Just lucky, I guess.
Well, we've all been blessed to hear your story today. And as always, I know all of us have learned a lot. That is Joe Haritani, 93 years old, of Sonora, California, where come September, he and his wife Amy are going to celebrate their 70th wedding anniversary. Find photos of the Haritanis then and now at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook. You'll even see that Joe still fits into his Go for Broke uniform after all these years. That is our program for today. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.